Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, breaking down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 126 event, which takes place in Austin, Texas. Now, typically, it'll be Nick Kalikas and me breaking down the fight card, but Nick's dealing with a loss on the family, so I'll be flying solo this week, and I promise Nick will return next week for UFC on Fox 28, for those of you that only tune in for him. Now, if you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Now, looking back at the last event, the MMA Oddsbreaker Premium won 2.4 units for UFC 211 for UFC 221 after going 2-0 on the premium bets. It also lost the one unit free bet. Now, back to the present. UFC Fight Night 126 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Oscar Pejota, who is 10-0-1, and Tim Williams, who is 15-3. Pejota opened as a minus 260 favorite with the comeback on Williams plus 200. Now, currently, Pejota has moved up to a minus 300 favorite with the comeback on Williams plus 250. So a little bit of steam coming in on Pejota. And rightfully so, in my opinion. Pejota looks rock solid as a fighter. He has a very strong grappling background, competing in the ADCCs. And I thought he looked great in his UFC debut. He just completely outworked Wilson. And the one thing I was a little bit worried about was how is Pejota's stand-up going to hold up in the UFC? And against a strong athlete with good power like Wilson, Pejota actually held his own and actually got the better of Wilson in most striking exchanges. So I'm not worried about the stand-up at all. And then Williams, honestly, I mean, this guy is the South Jersey Strangler, having spent the majority of his professional career on the East Coast. A lot of submission victories to his name. He's not a huge threat on the feet. I mean, he'll push a pace on the feet, but I mean, he's most dangerous on the ground, and that's Pejota's bread and butter. Pejota is a much smoother grappler. So, I think Williams is going to be in big trouble. I mean, you might know Williams from a couple appearances on The Ultimate Fighter. He lost an elimination bout to Dylan Andrews on Tough 17. And then on Tough 19, he, I believe, passed, won a fight, and then lost a fight to Diego Lima. So, Williams, he's capable, but I just don't think that he can really present much of a threat here to Pejota. Pejota probably has him beat on the feet, and he definitely has him beat on the ground. So, barring, you know, a lucky punch or Pejota not defending his neck or for some reason, which, you know, can happen. I think that this is Pejota's fight to lose. So I just think Pejota has too much for Williams. So Pejota's going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Joshua Berkman, who is 29-16 with one no contest, taking on Alex Morano, who is 13-4 with one no contest. Now, Morano opened as a minus 255 favorite with the comeback on Berkman plus 195. Steam has come in on Morano. He's now minus 290 with the comeback on Berkman plus 245. And again, rightfully so. I mean, Berkman has not had a good run thus far in the UFC. He's had his last five fights at welterweight, was very hit and miss, mostly miss, and he's returning to the welterweight division after fighting at lightweight. So I think he's going to be giving up a little bit of size, not much, to Morano. But the biggest difference here is age. I mean, Josh Berkman, it's surprising that he's giving another chance after losing four straight fights inside the octagon. And Murano, while he's hasn't been great, I mean, basically he's lost his last two. They overturned the one because Nico Price had a positive drug test, I think, after knocking him out. But, you know, Alex Murano's 27 years old. Josh Berkman's 37. So we got a huge 10-year age gap in these fighters. Murano has a lot less wear and tear. Berkman does have some power. So if he can crack Murano, then he could win this fight. But Murano has a higher pace. Murano is the more active, aggressive fighter. Berkman is durable. He does have a decent submission game, so I won't completely count him out here, but I mean, this is clearly the case of one fighter having a lot more left to prove, and Berkman, in my opinion, being on the decline. So, I think Murano's the rightful favorite. I would not bet him, but I do think that Murano's the right side here in terms of a pick, so he will be my pick. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a women's bantamweight contest between Sarah Morris, who is 5-3, and Lucy Pudilova, who is 7-2. Pudilova opened as the minus 185 betting favorite, with the comeback on Morris being plus 155. It's very similar now. A little bit has come in on Pudilova. She's minus 170, and Morris is currently a plus 150 underdog. So I can't fully agree with this. Pudilova hasn't been that impressive to me. She's a pretty good striker, not great, but in her UFC debut, she did do some pretty good damage in a rematch, and really hurt her opponent's eye. And then in her last fight, she picked up a close decision victory. I won't say that she's been amazing, but Pudilova has shown that she can strike and she's a capable striker. But that being said, you know, Lena Landsberg isn't that great of an opponent and was still able to, you know, win a close decision against her by pushing her around a little bit. And Ji Young Kim dropped down to the flyweight division after that fight. I mean, and you could argue that Kim won that fight, or at least it was close. So I really haven't been that impressed with Pudilova. Sarah Morris, on the other hand, actually has been pretty impressive. Now she's not the most athletic fighter, but, she makes up for that with, some heart and a very strong submission game. She doesn't have amazing wrestling, but if she gets this fight to the floor, I think that she has a very good chance of at least controlling Pudilova, if not submitting her. So, I mean, this fight's honestly gonna boil down to whether or not Morris can drag Pudilova to the ground. Morris is significantly better on the canvas, so, and she took a lot of time off between fights dealing with an injury, but I thought that in her last fight against Ashley Evan Smith, Morris looked pretty sharp and didn't look like she had any rust at all. So if she can bring that same tenacity and get this fight to the floor and work the ground game, I think she can win this fight. But if it stays standing, it's probably going to be Pudilova because Morris isn't that impressive in the stand-up department. So overall, I'm going to side with Morris. I think that she does get this fight to the floor, and I think that she actually can not just win on the canvas, but I think that she might be able to pick up a submission on the canvas. So I'm going with the underdog. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Roberto Sanchez, who is 7-1, taking on Joby Sanchez, who is 11-2. Joby Sanchez opened as a minus 135 betting favorite, with the comeback on Roberto Sanchez being plus 105. Currently, they are very similar. Not much line movement has happened. Joby Sanchez is still minus 135 favorite, and Roberto Sanchez is now a plus 115 underdog. So lines tightened up a little bit there, and I disagree. I mean, Joby Sanchez was not impressive in his original UFC run. He went 1-2 inside the octagon. His win wasn't that quality of a win. I mean, the guy is aggressive and pushes a good pace on the feet, but he doesn't have much of a ground game and he doesn't have very good takedown defense. And against somebody like Roberto Sanchez, who spent almost, pretty much his entire career in LFA or RFA, and what entered the UFC as the RFA reigning flyweight champion, I think he's getting a little bit of disrespect here. Now, granted, he did not have a good UFC debut. He entered as a betting favorite, and he got upset against Joseph Morales, and Morales did not look good in his recent fight against Figueroa, so maybe people are just doing a little MMA math, but I think Roberto Sanchez has a lot more to prove than what he showed in his UFC debut. I think he's a lot better fighter than that. It just all boils down to takedowns. Sanchez has an extremely good ground game. So if he can put Roberto Sanchez has an extremely good ground game, I got to use the first names here because they're both Sanchez's. But if Roberto Sanchez can put Joby Sanchez on his back, which is extremely possible, then I think Roberto Sanchez has a very good chance of pulling this fight out. Joby Sanchez, even in his last couple fights where he picked up wins to earn his way back to the octagon, he still got taken down in those fights. And with someone that has as good of a ground game as Roberto Sanchez, if he gets the takedown, he's not just going to keep Joby Sanchez on his back. He can definitely submit him or pick up a TKO victory on the ground. Now, Joby Sanchez on the feet, he's an active and aggressive fighter, so I think that he could throw enough volume to win rounds if it stays standing, but I don't think he keeps it upright for extended periods of time. I think he's going to be really having to fend off repeated takedown attempts, and I think Roberto Sanchez completes a good amount of those takedown attempts. So worst case scenario, I think Roberto Sanchez can win a decision with top control, and best case scenario, I think Roberto Sanchez pulls off the submission. So Roberto Sanchez is going to be my pick for this fight. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Jeff Neal, who is 8-2, taking on Brian Camozzi, who is 7-4. Now, Neal opened as a minus 165 favorite with the comeback on Camozzi plus 135, and the steam has come in on Neal. He's currently minus 210, Camozzi plus 175. And again, rightfully so. I mean, Brian Camozzi has not looked impressive at all thus far in his UFC stint. He's gone 0-2, been TKO'd in both fights, and now he's facing an extremely powerful stand-up fighter. Jeff Neal competed on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and he absolutely destroyed his opponent, picking up a win in about 2 minutes. So against somebody like Brian Camozzi, who can be a bit of a punching bag at times and does not have very good striking defense and does not have as – he's not as durable as his brother, Chris Camozzi, I think this could be a really bad matchup. Brian Camozzi is – tall and long for the welterweight division, but Jeff Neal is ferocious, and he lives up to his nickname, Hands of Steel. I mean, this guy in the Tuesday Night Contender Series, he fought 9 days after picking up a win, and then competed against a middleweight at the middleweight division and destroyed his opponent in 2 minutes. So now he's dropping back to his natural welterweight, and I think Brian Camozzi's in for a rough night. Camozzi is long, but he's not actually very good fighting at distance. He's better fighting in the clinch. He's better at close quarters with some of that Muay Thai. Camozzi does have a submission ability. I mean, he actually, if this goes to the ground, I actually would favor Camozzi. So maybe that's his best path to victory, especially, you know, training at elevation in Colorado. I think Camozzi has a decent chance if he can make this fight ugly, force this fight into the clinch and to the floor. But I'm not confident he can get it there or keep it there. Neal has very fast hands. He throws good, quick combinations. And the second his opponent covers up, he swarms. So I think Camozzi could be in for a really rough night. I think not only does Jeff Neal win this fight, I think that he actually can knock Camozzi out in the first round. So Jeff Neal is going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Jared Gordon, who is 14-1, taking on Carlos Diego Ferreira, who is 12-2. Gordon opened as a minus 195 betting favorite. The comeback on Ferreira was plus 160. Gordon is now a -260 favorite with the comeback on Ferreira +220. So I think a little bit of disrespect here for Carlos Diego Ferreira, mainly because people haven't seen him in a while. But I mean, Ferreira is a talented fighter and he's picked up some very good wins inside the octagon. I mean, I thought his performance, against Olivier Aubin Mercier was tremendous. Granted, it was a while ago, 2 years ago, but I mean, that was the last time we saw him inside the octagon and he destroyed Mercier. So I think people are kind of forgetting a little bit about how skilled, Ferreira is. I mean, Ferreira should be the better grappler compared to Gordon. He doesn't have the wrestling of Gordon, but I do think that he has a much better submission game. I mean, the way that he kind of styled on Mercier a little bit on the ground was very impressive. And on the feet, I think Ferreira actually has some pretty good technique on the feet too. He can be dangerous. Now, granted, he can be knocked out. You saw that against Dustin Poirier. He really ate some shots and, did not look that good in that fight. And then, the thing that Jared Gordon has going for him is this guy is tenacious, aggressive, and has a really big heart. I've been impressed with what I've seen out of him so far. I think Gordon is very capable of winning this fight, especially if it goes to decision, just from outworking Ferreira, maybe wearing him down, especially with how long it's been since Ferreira's actually competed. But I mean, skill for skill, I think Ferreira's actually the better fighter. So if Ferreira fights up to his potential and he isn't rusty, I think he wins this fight. If he's rusty, Gordon outworks him, probably wins a decision, maybe even picks up a TKO if he can wear Ferreira down, grind him out a little bit. But I think this fight's a lot closer than the betting odds indicate, and I'm actually going to lean on the underdog. I think Carlos Diego Ferreira can pick apart Gordon a little bit on the feet using a superior striking technique, maybe overcoming Gordon's aggressiveness, landing some good counters. And if it goes to the floor, I see Ferreira picking up some sweeps, getting top position, or threatening with submissions. So I think that while Gordon is talented and his aggression is a big advantage against most people, I think Ferreira can counter some of those advantages. So I'm going to side with Carlos Diego Ferreira. Maybe I'm a little crazy. I could be completely wrong and Gordon just styles on him and is significantly more aggressive and runs away with it. But if Carlos Diego Ferreira fights to his potential, I think that he actually has a really good shot of winning this. Now, kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have Super Sage Northcutt, who is 9-2, taking on Thibaut Gaudy, who is 11-3. Now, the odds for this fight, Northcutt opened as a -215 favorite, and Gaudy was a +170. And the steam did come in on Northcutt, which is not surprising. Northcutt's now -320, the comeback on Gaudy +260. And, Sage Northcutt is just one of those polarizing type of, fighters that the UFC has put a lot of promotion behind, and he's popular and people bet him, but I'm not surprised people are betting him this time. This is a pretty good matchup for Northcutt. Gaudy does not have very good striking defense, and Gaudy does not have very good takedown defense. So if Northcutt can utilize some of that athleticism that he has, I think he shoots in for takedowns, dumps Gaudy on his back, and just wails on him over the course of three rounds. Or Northcutt could just crack him on the feet. Now, on the feet, it's more dangerous. Gaudy does have a decent striking background. While Gaudy is hittable on the feet, and he could get beat, he could knock Northcutt out on the feet. I do think that Northcutt is going, if he fights at distance and utilizes that, those fast twitch athleticism that he has, Northcutt has a good shot of cracking him as well. But if Northcutt's smart, he takes this fight to the floor. He has good takedowns. He's aggressive. He's quick. I think he can shoot in for a double leg from the outside, and I don't see Gaudy stopping it. I think this is a good stylistic matchup for Northcutt, and he should win. But if this fight stays on its feet for any extended period of time, Northcutt could be playing with fire. He's a bit chinny, and Gowdy can win this fight by knockout at any point, honestly, if Northcutt is screwing around on the feet too much. So my pick is going to be Sage Northcutt, but I would stay away from this one for betting. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Steven Peterson, who is 15-6, taking on Brandon Davis, who is 8-3. Davis opened as a minus 195 favorite with the comeback on Peterson plus 160. They're very similar odds right now. Davis minus 200, comeback is plus 170. Personally, I agree with the betting odds. I mean, originally, this was going to be Peterson against Humberto Burdenay, but Burdenay got removed from the bout about a week and a half ago and due to visa issues, and Brandon Davis stepped in. You may remember Davis from having fought about two or three events ago against Kyle Bochniak, and he lost that fight. Bochniak was not engaging with him as much on the feet as I thought he would. That fight was actually, honestly, completely terrible. It was not a good performance, and Bochniak ended up winning a ugly decision. It was not a fun fight to watch, which is surprising because Davis is an extremely exciting fighter that throws a huge amount of volume when he has the opportunity with combinations. So I'm hoping that this fight is going to be much more entertaining, and at least according to the matchup, it should. Peterson is usually willing to engage his opponents on the feet, and while I do think Peterson has a slightly more well-rounded game than Davis, and if this stays standing, I favor Davis pretty significantly. Peterson is very hittable on the feet. I mean, he's only at 50% striking defense. That is terrible. Like, Davis isn't even that great with striking defense at 66%, but I mean, that is so much better than Peterson. I mean, Peterson takes a pounding when he fights. So I'm a bit concerned if he stays standing that the only way Peterson can win if it stays standing is if Davis punches himself out, which is possible. I mean, he really goes for it on the feet when given the opportunity. So I think this fight will be entertaining. Peterson is probably going to get outworked, and it should be a slugfest. I think it'll be a candidate for fight of the night if it goes all the way to decision or at least late into the second round before a finish materializes. But I think Davis's striking will accumulate on Peterson, especially with how hittable Peterson is. And I think this time maybe Davis shakes off those UFC jitters and gets a much better performance and picks up a win. So I think Davis can win by TKO or just outworking Peterson en route to a decision. So Davis is my pick. I hope he redeems himself here. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Thiago Alves, who is 27-11, taking on Curtis Millender, who is 14-3. Now, Thiago Alves opened as a minus 160 betting favorite. The comeback on Millender, plus 130. Currently, Alves is minus 165, Millender's plus 145. So not a lot of line movement there, and I think this fight could go either way. I mean, Thiago Alves is the more technical, experienced striker of the two, but Millender is so much bigger and longer, and at this point, a little quicker than Alves. I mean, Alves has been fighting for such a long time. He's a serious veteran of the sport, and he's now, I mean, it doesn't seem like 34. It seems like he's older than that, but so he is getting up there, especially in fight years. But Millender is a lot more graceful. And what I really like out of Millender is the kicking game, obviously. I mean, this guy is very aggressive with kicks. I mean, he throws head kicks, leg kicks, body kicks. I mean, he's willing to eat a leg kick and then the second he absorbs the leg kick, he'll plant with the leg that got kicked and then throw one to the head. I mean, he kind of uses his momentum to set up the next strike. That's actually how he picked up one of his knockout victories to earn his way to the UFC. He picked up a couple head kick knockouts in his last two fights. Most recently, just a couple weeks ago in January, for RFA to earn an opportunity to compete here. Millender is an exciting fighter. on a nice win streak. And this is a stiff test for his UFC debut. So I wouldn't be shocked if Thiago Alves pulls this one out. I mean, Alves is the more experienced striker, but to beat Melnader, you have to pressure him. You either have to pressure him or you have to take him down. I mean, he has a couple losses in Bellator by submission. So clearly the ground game is not his biggest strength, but the best way for Alves to beat him, since I don't expect Alves to be shooting in for takedowns, is control the center of the octagon, press forward. Don't give Melnader a lot of space to throw his kicks. Get inside. Force this fight to get into more of a phone booth boxing range. And that's a much better situation for Alves. I mean, Alves is still does have some heavy hands. He's a dangerous striker at any range. But I mean, if he can avoid the end of Melnader's kicking game, the better he'll be. Because Melnader can knock Alves out at any moment's notice if he gets the distance to really connect with a cracking head kick. So I'm concerned about Alves. I mean, he is getting up there. I don't think that he's fighting at the same level that he used to be. So even though he is the betting favorite here, and I do think that he is the more technical striker, I think Melnader's athleticism, speed, quickness, and length. I mean, he is going to have a massive size advantage here. I mean, Melnader is 6 inches taller. I think in terms of reach, especially leg reach, I mean, it is ridiculous how much longer he'll be throwing kicks from compared to Alves. So I think Melnader can pull this off. Now, again, if Alves presses him, he can definitely at least win a decision, if not knock Melnader out. But I just don't know if Alves will be able to do that. So we'll see how this fight plays out. This is a major step up for Melnader in terms of opposition. But, I mean, he was competing against some decent guys in RFA and pulling off some pretty impressive knockout victories. So I'm going to side tentatively with Melnader. But Alves definitely could be a savvy enough veteran to pull this one out if he fights to the right game plan. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have James Vick, who is 12-1, taking on Francisco Trinaldo, who is 22-5. James Vick opened as a minus 245 betting favorite, the comeback on Trinaldo plus 175. Vick is currently minus 130 with Trinaldo plus 190. So, not a ton of line movement there. Vick is rightfully the betting favorite here, I think, that he has shown some improvements. I mean, I've not been the biggest fan of James Vick over the course of his career. I've always thought that he was too hittable on the feet. I thought that he didn't move his head nearly enough. And that was proven correct in the fight against Beneil Dariush. But I would say Vick has bounced back pretty impressively. He's shown some improvements. Vick is able to make some good adjustments in fights. He fights long. And while he still doesn't move his head very much, he does kind of use offense as his best defense. I mean, he's active with knees, kicks, punches, using jabs, and he's able to force his opponent to have to wade through strikes to land their own offense. I mean, Joseph Duffy had a lot of trouble dealing with Vic as that fight wore on and Vic settled in. So I think Vic is a dangerous opponent. Now, Francisco Trinaldo should not be slept on. I mean, this guy has picked up quality wins over and over and over again inside the octagon. Trinaldo pushes a high tempo. He has solid technical boxing, and he can really be dangerous if suckered into a brawl where he pushes a heavy pace and does have some nasty power. The biggest difference in this fight is size. I mean, James Vick is one of the tallest, longest fighters in the lightweight division, standing about 6'3". He's got 6 inches in reach on Trinaldo, and he is 6 inches taller. So if Vick is able to keep Trinaldo at range, then I think he's going to have a strong performance. Or if he can get this fight real close, Vick actually is pretty dangerous in the clinch, and he's very dangerous if he can grab a guillotine choke with those long limbs. So if Trinaldo can force this more into a phone booth situation, or maybe just make it a bit of a brawl due to Vic's poor striking defense when exchanging, then Trinaldo has a better chance. But I just don't know if he'll be able to pull it off. I mean, Vic is fighting in his backyard. I mean, his nickname's the Texecutioner. So this fight taking place in Texas, he's going to have a lot of crowd support. So I'm favoring Vic here. I will mention that I am very bad at picking James Vic fights. I think I pick against him constantly. He's 8-1 in the UFC. So I'm finally picking him. I could be completely wrong and I could look stupid, but I do think that this is James Vick's fight to lose. I think he can choke Trinaldo out if this fight does at some point go to the floor, which is unlikely, but if it does, I think Vic has the advantage there. And Vic's length should give Trinaldo problems. Trinaldo does have power. I mean, that one-shot knockout of Chad Laprise is very impressive. And if he can step inside and crack Vic, he could do it here as well. But I'm going to favor Vic. I think that he does keep Trinaldo at distance and he frustrates Trinaldo over the course of three rounds, if not potentially picking up a stoppage along the way. So Vic is my pick, but not crazy confident about it. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Derek Lewis, who is 18-5 with one no contest, taking on Marcin Tybura, who is 16-3. Tybura opened as a minus 130 betting favorite. The comeback on Lewis was minus 110. So nearly pick 'em. And currently Tybura's now minus 145 and Lewis is a plus 125 underdog. So a little bit of the public action has come in on Tybura. And I would say rightfully so. Derek Lewis is always going to be dangerous. He's powerful. He's strong. If he gets top position on anyone, I think he has the most lethal ground and pound in the UFC. The problem is, he just doesn't sound like he has a big passion for fighting at this point. He's had a history of issues with his back and, it really came to a head in that last loss to Mark Hunt, where he slowed down in that fight and then just got beat up and eventually TKO'd in the fourth round. Now, granted, I don't think Tybura is as technical or impressive of a striker as Mark Hunt, but Derek Lewis retired after that fight, and then I guess he changed his mind. So I don't know where his head is at this point. I do think Lewis is the more dangerous finisher of the two, but Tybura has a pretty good ground game. He has decent submissions, and on the feet, he's pretty solid. I mean, he throws head kicks that can be very dangerous if they connect, and he pushes a decent pace. He's not the greatest, most efficient striker, but I do think he's the better striker of the two between himself and Lewis. Lewis does have power, but if Tybura uses just even half-decent striking defense, and just watches out for the big haymakers, he should be able to avoid the damage against Lewis. So I think this is a winnable fight for Tybura. The main thing here is just don't be on your back against Lewis. If you at any point are on your back, do everything you physically can to get off of your back against Lewis, because if you're there for more than 5 to 10 seconds, I think you're going to lose the fight due to knockout. So I think this is a decent matchup for Tybura as long as he can keep Lewis at range on the feet. Maybe work for takedowns, try to get top position with his advantage in overall grappling and submissions. So, I think Tybura pulls this off. It's just, it's more I'm leaning against Lewis due to just what I've seen out of Lewis so far in terms of how he's acting towards his fighting career. So I'm siding with Tybura. I think he pulls off a decision in this fight, but if he winds up on his back, you better be in for a rough night if you're backing Tybura. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 32-10 with one no contest, taking on Yancy Medeiros, who is 15-4 with one no contest. Cerrone opened as a minus 160 betting favorite with the comeback on Medeiros plus 120. The line action has tightened up a little bit. Cowboy is now minus 155 with Medeiros being plus 135. So I would say that that's fair. I mean, Medeiros had one of the best fights of the year in his last performance against the other cowboy, Alex Oliveira, ended up being a third round TKO for Medeiros in a fight where, I mean, he was in huge trouble at one point. I mean, he was getting beat on. He ate some huge shots against Oliveira, but survived it and then really dished out some punishment in the second round. Hurt Oliveira badly, and then by the third round, Oliveira didn't have much left, and Medeiros was able to put him away. So that's really the name of the game with Medeiros. I mean, this is a guy that takes a ton of punishment on the feet and then dishes it back out. If he can weather the storm, then that's really where Medeiros can shine. I mean, Medeiros, I mentioned how Peterson had horrific striking defense. Medeiros is at 48%, so he's even worse. And against somebody that is as accurate and powerful and dangerous as Donald Cerrone, I think that that is a bad stylistic matchup for Medeiros. Basically, for Medeiros to win this fight, he needs to turn it into an all-out brawl. I mean, if he forces, if this is a technical fight, I think Cerrone eats Medeiros for lunch. Cerrone has not been fighting particularly well lately, especially that last fight where, I mean, he just got destroyed by Darren Till. Before that, he had a close loss to Robbie Lawler. And then before that, he got TKO'd by Jorge Masvidal. So he's on a 3-fight losing streak. So Cerrone needs a big time comeback. And I think that this is a good matchup for him. With how hittable Medeiros is and how I expect this to stay standing, if Cerrone can work his head kick game, if he can land some power punches, I think that he can definitely win this fight. I mean, Medeiros is hittable. I mean, part of his game revolves around getting hit just to force engagements. But he doesn't have the greatest chin. He does have good recovery. So, I mean, he gets rocked, and then if he doesn't get put away, then he does bounce back and turns fights into just slobber knockers. I mean, the Dustin Poirier fight, I mean, he took some monster shots in that fight, ended up losing by standing TKO. He just wouldn't go down. But I think with Donald Cerrone, how he is so precise with some of his kicks, I think he can really punish Medeiros. I mean, Medeiros has been hurt repeatedly to the body, and if Donald Cerrone can land some body kicks, I think he can do some serious damage in this fight. I think Cerrone has the punching power to hurt Medeiros, and especially the head kicks. But if Cerrone mixes things up and stays technical and does not get suckered into a brawl, this is his fight to lose. But if this gets turned into a brawl, it's anybody's game, because Medeiros has power. He has durability in terms of bouncing back from getting hit and still being dangerous at any moment's notice. And Medeiros does have a little bit of reach on Cerrone. So, I mean, if Donald Cerrone is getting cocky at any point, dropping his hands, he could wind up on his back. You know, just staring at the ceiling, wondering what happened. But overall, my pick is going to be Donald Cerrone. I think that he is just the superior technical striker, and as long as he keeps this technical, then he's going to be in a good position. But if this turns into one of those crazy fight of the night brawls, it's anybody's game, and that does play into Medeiros' favor. So my pick is Cerrone. I just hope that he has a smart game plan, and you never quite know with Cerrone. I mean, he can be inconsistent, but I do think that he pulls this out. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 126. Premium bets for the event will be released Saturday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.